finally meet the three. Now I feel like a true minority now.
Welcome to the Sage of Three Paths podcast. We are three brothers who use this space to talk about a range of topics. Anything from politics, race, anime, and pop culture. Each giving our own perspectives and opinions. I'm the youngest, Mo Janna, also known as Junior Lab.
I'm the oldest, Okello, but my brothers call me AJ.
Middle child, Oz, aka Wizard King.
We three brothers!
One sec. We once again thank you for tuning in and joining us on this sometimes cathartic journey. Let's dive right in. Cool, so I guess first and foremost I want to say happy Samhain Festival. Happy Samhain Festival.
That's racist.
Why?
What's Samhain? Like Samsung?
No, it's you know they have Halloween, right?
So
there's a pagan Celtic religious celebration that they used to do years ago, like very, very long time ago, and it's called Samhain, spelled S-A-M-W. You know what? I'm gonna have to rebuttal and find out how you spell it, but basically they celebrate the ending of summer. So it's the same, and it's, yeah, the god of death, basically, which I think links in with Halloween.
So first of all, that sounds similar to the winter solstice. And second of all, you threw a left ball there. I thought you were doing some, like, happy Chinese New Year, because Stella was from, it's from the... Well, looks like, I don't know where she's from. She looks like she's from the
East Asia,
eastern side of planet Earth.
Okay, so.
Yeah, because I look like a Korean, so I deserve to know a festival that sounds like a Korean mobile.
Wait, Stella, what does a Korean look like?
I can't. Oh my God. You said it were a trap. I'm not sure if my political correct side should come out or my comedian side.
I want your comedian side. What does a Korean look like?
Oh my God. This is horrible. This is horrible. Okay. Okay. So these are, I've been re-educated. First disclaimer. Now I've been re-educated in UK. I know this is horribly wrong, but for the 23 years before, when I was just leaving China, the general stereotype out there about Korea is they have a big, our face is already flat compared to other race feature, but Koreans are considered the most flat among all Eastern Asian.
The most and flat.
Yes. Flat. Yeah, I think that's the right way. Like it compared to Caucasian people, like if you see from the side, like East Asian, like facial feature are very, very, you can say gentle, but we like to say flat because we just that brutal on ourselves.
You know,
and Korea is the most flat among them all.
Stella, really interesting for me because you compared it. You compared the Asian facial structure to the European facial structure as if the European facial structure is the standard to go by. One day, I was thinking, like, if aliens came down and were like, listen, we want to speak to humans and we've looked at your population and obviously humans are Chinese because that's the highest population, right? The representative of Earth, the standard should be your people.
Exactly. I mean, that's the bizarre part. And I think that's the colonials what the cultural invasion does. It's unconscious. It's already in everyone's unconscious, and you can't believe how many girls and boys that take choosing to do like plastic surgery to get them Caucasian features.
100%.
And we, if you go on the street, even when you're in China, even now, most of places are still like this, which I'm pissed about, is when they need to represent something that's high-end, that represents quality life, find a Caucasian model, that's it, problem solved.
Yeah, with the blonde hair, right?
Yeah, back then it was them doing it to us because there's they colonized us.
Yes.
But now we're doing it to ourselves. They go mind their own business, but Chinese people continue that.
It's a form of mental slavitude. There's a inferiority complex that's been imposed upon people who were colonized. And it's really freeing, I believe, to understand that. Oh, and I guess it's because I grew up in the UK amongst Europeans, you know, English people in particular. It's like, oh, they're just the same as us. There's nothing special or worse about them. They're quite literally the same as us, but have been exposed to less sun, so are not as dark as us.
Yeah, I think it's inferior complexity is spotted on when you describe like the effects of this why we still stuck back then in the aesthetics that's being imposed on us. But another one is the inferior complexity is very complicated. What I found another cultural shock in Eastern Asian values like Confucius mainly, it's humble. The humble think you're not good enough. Mm-hmm. It's a good quality. And everybody, like, basically everybody been tamed into inferior complexity, been trained us that way from the very little. But here I feel the mainstream culture give me the impression of celebrate confidence and just feel like we're equals. And that's healthy. I like that. That's healthy. But also in the meantime, when I'm behaving like that now, when I go back home, people will normally like, oh, why are you so cocky? You know, I'm just confident, but it can be read as cocky.
That's interesting.
Yeah, I think generally it's normally like a fine line between confidence and cockiness. And before we proceed on, I know probably the listeners are thinking, hang on a moment, like what's going on? There's another voice on here. I would like to introduce... give a short introduction, someone that I have known not a massively long time, but I feel like some of the conversations we've had have been the types that you would have with someone that you've known for a long time. I'd like to say this is Stella No Foreplay. That's your middle name, I'm going to say. Stella No Foreplay. I won't drop the last name. I guess she can introduce herself. Yes, a good work colleague of mine, a good friend as well. Welcome to the Sage of Three Paths. These are my brothers here, AJ
welcome,
Oz.
Welcome. Good to see you.
Are you going to do that? I remember you guys always have this intro.
Yeah, the intro is always there. Yeah, we'll have the intro. If you can do your little skip for the intro as well, I guess. But yeah, introduce yourself, Stella.
My last name is Wang, and I come from China, and I've been in UK for 8 years now, and I'm recently start to unleash my true self, I think, when I speak in English. I have been a very, very nice and polite person for the past 7 years. Not saying I'm no longer being nice anymore, but it's just like I start to find a vocabulary for me to being the real me that I was for a long time. But in the meantime, maintain a certain level of social acceptance. Of course, I still get complaints of inappropriate jokes from work, but I'm sure Mo will vouch for me. I'm a nice person.
Absolutely, yeah. One of the nicest people that I've met, actually. A talented designer, UX experience, also a YouTuber. We have vlogger. There's so many. I can understand that you're really tapping into the just the different elements in your character with just what you do.
Yeah, I'm thinking about release another big video because recently there's a big thing happening in my life. Finally, I felt after 6 months weekly vlogging, I was running out of things to share. I'm just like, this is my life, period. Now, what else do you want to know? I just go on, have Zoom meetings most of the time. But finally, I have some content, and I'm looking forward to put out another video on my YouTube channel. Yeah. That's the problem. I don't even have a handle on my YouTube channel yet. I don't even know what to let people... Well, I will include the link in the wherever it can be inserted. Mm.
Yeah, in the show notes.
I got a question, Stella.
Yeah.
Do you dream in English or Chinese? And forgive me for saying Chinese, because I know it's either Mandarin or Cantonese.
Mandarin. That's smart.
Do you dream in Mandarin or English?
So, it's very nice you asked that, because I use dream language as my monument of how well I know a language. Mm-hmm. So I had my first English dream, I think, when I was still in China, but I have spent a few months in Egypt, and then make a friend from India, but we all speak English, and she visits me in China afterwards. We spend another month together. On the trip with her, during the trip, one night we were in the hotel room, I had my first English dream. So I was like, yes, so now I'm thinking in English. And
your subconscious is
seeps into the subconscious. Yeah. What was the dream about?
I still remember. It was about a horrible train ride, because it's really difficult to get the train tickets, and we're always trying to fight for seats or fight for train tickets.
Man. Yeah.
And I just remember in English, it's just somebody squeezed me and took my seat. I just tell them, move your ass away, that's my seat.
That's an awesome dream. And that reminds me of my experience when I visited China. I traveled across China, and I experienced the ticket system for trains. Oh my God, what on earth is going on?
Yeah.
You're going to have to explain, because I have no idea. So, blank slate.
First of all, when was that? Which year?
Oh, this was some time ago.
Yeah. I will have vision if you tell me which year I will start to see things, but go on.
Yeah, please explain.
So that there was this there was this window with someone behind it who was paying, you know, you pay the ticket to them,
mm-hmm.
and you pay your money and they give you the ticket, and there's no queues. They don't queue. There was just no queue. It was just a mad take my money, give me a ticket hands everywhere. I was going on, and there's so many people trying to get a ticket at once.
Yeah. It's not a queue. It's just a pile of people.
100%.
Chaos. It's still like that. To be honest, this is every time when I go back to China, if I have to do anything involve a bit of waiting time, the anger just just immediately. I'm just like, why can't we be civilized people? But people don't queue there. If you try to queue, you're never going to get anything done.
You're not going to get anything. Do you know what?
That's kind of blown me away. Like, the impression that I have of China, or the image in my mind, is this place that's so far ahead in the future that everyone is like inorderly, almost German-esque. Like, everyone's like highest tier of professionalism, of respect, of, I don't know, respect of space to queue, but essentially not. Why would you say that's the case? Because you can see it in most places that people would queue, perhaps.
I guess it depends on which part of China. I know Mo has been in Shenzhen. And when you describe the high-tech China,
mm-hmm.
that's probably Shenzhen and Shanghai. That's probably, you don't yet, the technology is like blown your mind off. You don't even need to queue. Everything is pre-booked. You just go there and click a few buttons, you get it. That's one part of China, but China is gigantic. China is like the whole Europe.
Yeah.
So if you compare of whatever, like East European to what Amsterdam to France, you will see a cultural difference. I grown up, people are just very, very blunt. And And also, I think it came from China's technology and economy all developed so fast. If you just dial back the time, 25, 30 years ago, it was a time every resource was short. It used to be cultural revolutionary. Like, those memories are still very vivid. So my parents been through the time they've been rationed for food. So the memory was there. And then that, the collective generation with that collective memory kind of established the convention of the society. So for them, probably there's nothing wrong. They grown up with no queue and you need to fight for that resource. And then that's how it is. But for me, is I experience how easy, how just nice things would be if people queuing. And that's why when I go back, I start to feel something was wrong. But back then when I was in China, I get quite proud of like how I can win those battles, you know?
It's like when you're at a music concert and you're like, follow me, I'll get us to the front. We'll go through the mosh pit, go through the crowd. Just follow me, I'll be the person.
Exactly.
That reminds me when Mo took me to a Travis Scott concert. Travis Scott show. And
oh God.
To be honest, I don't go to many shows like that. If I'm going to a show, it's gonna be something with poetry, or it's gonna be something a jazz show or something quite mellow. But we go to the show and I've heard Travis Scott songs, I'm kind of a fan. But I went there and I got the shit beat out of me. Everyone's moshing. And I'm like, I'm knocking on 30, man. I'm not, I don't want to come here. I don't want to come and see an artist and break a leg or break an ankle or get hit hard enough that it pushes me to the point where I actually get angry. Because there's people pushing and shoving, but it only takes that one hit that's too hard or in a place that you don't like. And you can switch.
Yeah.
Oh man, very, very close. Very, 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 very close. So that's the image I have in my mind of standing in a queue, well, this queue-less society of people fighting for a ticket, just mosh pitting. Oh man, no.
I can't resonate so much when you say like I'm hitting 30, like why am I here? Normally my trigger was like, if I start to think, I actually pay money for this experience.
True.
Is it worth it? Yeah.
Okay. You know what? I thoroughly enjoyed myself. The only thing is, it was just far too rough.
Wild.
It was just too much.
I don't know. Do you listen to Travis Scott, Stella? Do you know Travis Scott?
I didn't. He's not in my regular playlist, but I definitely heard his music, and I have friends like them. So it can trigger like elbowing. I can imagine that.
I think in terms of performers, he's definitely up there with the most wildest and energetic. He climbs up balconies and jumps off them into the crowd.
Yeah,
like,
yeah. He
does that almost
that
every
show.
Mm. And I definitely, even when I went, I remember I went with a cotton t-shirt, and when I came out, it felt like the material had changed completely. So it was just so wet and soaked with, you know,
other people's sweat.
Sweat and maybe blood and maybe
horrible.
Even a little bit
honestly
of the early days of COVID.
You see, the thing is, in my experience in China, even that ticket thing was amazing. Like, for me, there was no complaints. Like, obviously, I'm like, what the hell is this? But there's just always so many people.
Mm.
So, and as Stella was saying, China's really young for its technology advances.
I said the modernization of
It's super China. Young.
Mm, interesting.
Yeah. So exactly like you were talking, I've got a master's in political theory and ideology and that type of nonsense. So I had to study different things. And my master's dissertation was Africa's new colonial masters, China, involvement in superpower. China's the new world leaders. That is what it is. Is that a good thing? Is that a bad thing? We'll see. They've lifted more people out of poverty than anyone else throughout history.
Fair, yeah. They're really hard on the infrastructure, like helping Africa with the infrastructure. But also, it's a. I was literally just joking with my husband the other day, talking about exactly what you were writing there. Is I was telling him, you know what's going on now? Like, China is basically trying to make Africa China's China.
Yeah. There's universities in Africa that's teaching Confucianism.
Yes.
Wow,
yes.
I didn't know that.
There's dedicated universities to Confucianism in Africa right now.
Confucianism?
Confucius. It's philosophy, kind of? It's that thing I said at the beginning, give everybody inferior complexity.
Okay, okay.
It's philosophy in a way of living and being.
Mm.
So it borderlines on religion.
Yeah. But it's not my favorite one, I must say, among all the Chinese philosophy, just personally, in my personality, I'm more lean towards Taoism, which is more heavier on freedom, like you're free in your mind. But Confucius is about obeying, it's about respect, it's about you see a hierarchy, it's not all equal. And that part is, but Confucius is definitely most utilized philosophy, I think, in mainland China. It be used in company infrastructure, even in the political infrastructure, because it's a thing that help reign or ruling, like controlling. And Taoism is more free. I guess if everybody follows Taoism, nobody probably gonna do anything productive, just sit there and smoke weed.
Nobody's gonna be cute. Taoism you're talking about. Do you have a leaflet?
You know that symbol, you see it everywhere, Yin Yang.
Welcome to the Sage of Three Paths podcast. We are three brothers who use this space to talk about a range of topics. Anything from politics, race, anime, and pop culture, each giving our own perspectives and opinions. I'm the youngest, Mo Jana, also known as Junior Lab.
I'm the oldest, Okello, but my brothers call me AJ.
Middle child, Oz, aka Wizard King.
That's awesome. That's super cool. When was the last time you went back? Or in fact, when you came, because I think you said about, you know, when you go back, you see the queue or the non-queues and you're like, when you first came over to this side of the world, what was your kind of experiences? And like, what was the one thing that you was like, I hate this here?
The one thing I hate this here is people just standing. Actually, the first thing I hated here was queuing too, which is crazy ironic. It's this particular queue. It's the queue in front of English pub. It's people can hold that one bottle of beer and standing in the cold wind, not moving for hours, but nobody find anything was wrong. And I was the only one like, where are we going to go? Are we going to stand here forever? I'm the only one getting irritated by that because I'm freezing. And I don't understand how this experience can become a social. Again, I'm into that mindset. Like, why am I paying for standing in the cold wind and drinking cold beer while queuing for a seat, which I'm never going to get? And that was my first. I'm just constantly pissed why there's no food, why there's only alcohol. And even when there's food, it's just shitty food like chips in the bag. Like, that's not food. It's not warm. It's not steaming hot. There's no smoke on top of it. That's not food. That doesn't count.
But for sure, you get to eat some really good food in China, right?
Oh. I think food and smell is something that's the most nostalgic and really, really hard to change. Like, my mindset changed, but my taste just doesn't change. Sometimes it's just, if it's a salad, I will cry. I can't count how many times I just cry over a salad. Like, when I had a bad day, and then I just really need some food to nurture myself back, and all I have it's a bowl of salad and I can just sit there and cry about it.
Do you know, I had this experience where I went to this Chinese village. So this place wasn't developed at all. We had chickens running around. It was as real as it gets. I was like, okay, now I'm experiencing China. None of this modernization. I'm seeing the China that was before. And I went to this place for noodles and they had this old wooden contraption. They get this dough and they put the dough in it and they squeeze it down and you hear it go, and it squeezes out as noodles and freshly put, like, make that for you. And it's this thing, I'm going to pronounce it poorly, but I'll try it in case you could recognize it. It was called chow mein.
Mian. I can recognize the last one. It's mian. It's noodles, but it's a specific kind of noodles. So, guess describe more. Maybe I can pick it up.
It was really spicy. It was like this oily, watery type thing. Oh, it was incredibly tasty. It was one of my favorite food experiences in my life.
Oh my god! If you like noodle, which part do you remember? Which part of China are you?
That was in Chengdu.
Oh, awesome. Okay, so it's my hometown is just next to Chengdu. We have basically very similar food. And those kind of noodles are the things I crave the most when I describe, like, I have a bad day. Or sometimes I just need a kick to start my day. I eat that for breakfast. I need that spicy to wake me up. That's my coffee. So I cook that all the time. And one of my biggest hobby when I just come here to study is I love to host dinner party at my home. And then I will cook those dish. I will cook those real authentic spicy dish. And then I enjoy so much watch the toughest guy weeping over the food. And then there was a guy in the design school, like, he was always a superstar. I host my own exhibition whatsoever. None of your idea works. Mine's the best. But one day when we were all there eating my noodle and he was crying like a baby and come like, Stella, why you made mine the most spicy? I'm like, no, everyone had the same. You're just being a little wuss.
Yes, the food experiences. You got that table thing, which is a spinny table on top of the table?
Yeah.
Is that something that's commonly done in your culture?
Yes, everywhere. When you go to more or less fancier like places. For a noodle shop, you probably won't have that because that's just one dish. It's when you have a big shared table with a 10 people dinner to make sure everyone can try a bit of everything without moving.
Spin the table.
Loads of like plates or bowls on the table and everyone just spins. That is the solution.
Yeah, but there is funny one of people using it. I saw there was a guy, there was a white guy. I think he's Canadian. It's friends. I went to China and he doesn't quite get the idea of that table, but he did discover one of the dish that he really liked, but he's also not that great with chopsticks. So it took him a bit of time to get the dish, but it's keep moving, so eventually he's standing up and following his dish around.
I will say chopsticks was a thing. Like, they don't do knives and forks. There is no knives and forks. The first time I went out to a restaurant to eat, I asked for, can I have a fork? Because I couldn't use chopsticks. And after like a lot of hard work by this poor waiter, he comes back with this baby fork for me.
I was like,
I'll use chopsticks. So I figured out how to use chopsticks by force.
Nice.
So you learned it?
Yeah, I'm quite good.
Yeah, a little bit of pressure, like when you had no choice. Yeah. When he basically gave you a spork that insults you.
Yeah.
Do you know what? That's interesting, like on the topic of food. Stella, on the flip side of food being amazing, I am of the impression that the Chinese eat just about anything under the sun.
Yes. Now, yes, that's absolutely
said with
true.
Confidence. Mm.
Yes, yes. Some people, I don't know, there's a lot of people like always like categorize this as like racist, like, oh, you say Chinese people eat dog, that's racist. No, I saw Chinese people eating dog. I'm a Chinese. I personally went down the street and protested about this. And that's not, that's just some province just having this
what this exactly tradition. Is wrong with dog meat? I don't understand. What's the problem?
I guess it's just too close to people's heart. Like, it's a companion animal. It's hypocritical, because what's the difference of a pig or a dog? It's just dog can please you. But if we escalate the whole thing to a philosophical level, oh yeah, some people can have emotional connection with a chicken.
I was literally going to say some people can have emotional. What if chickens are now the new man's best friend? That's it, we're not eating chickens anymore.
Yeah, we have to move to dog.
I think it's just a mainstream. Like, how much amount of people having an emotional bond with dog, you just can't
find that. If I was there at your protest, you wouldn't be selling it to me. I'm just saying. You don't sound like you're against eating dog. You sound like you're, right? Like you're cool with it. And you know what?
Because I've eaten dog before. I've never eat dog myself, but I did went through a really wild ride about protesting about dog. What we did is, I'm like a high school student, and we heard there are people like just stealing other people's dog just on the street if they don't put it on leash.
I'd probably join you if that's the case.
And then put it on a truck and then put it into some food factories. So we go to the highway to stop the truck. And we did stop. There's a local charity. And we stop truck. I think in total, I was involved in 2 truck, but there are many. And then they end up have a whole camp of dogs. But nobody have any follow-up plans. They don't know how to keep all this dog alive. And nobody agreed on you can't put any of them to sleep. You know, in animal charity here, they have a life cycle, like either get adopted or be put to sleep. But there, we don't have that plan. So, and then after stop 2 trunk, I had one experience to visit back that place somebody offered for free to keep all these dogs. We stopped probably coming on food, and there was thousands of dogs in cage and piles of poo. And it smells horrible. And I spent the whole day to scoop like doo-doo outside of the cage, and my eyes burns. And I'm just like,
that's your responsibility. That was gonna be in somebody's stomach, and now it wasn't.
But I was like, this is not working. At that moment, my eye got burned by those, and I witnessed the horrible scene there. And like, there is a life cycle. Some got adopted, some got put to sleep. Like, there's a limit on everything. Everything is dynamic. We can't save everyone. That moment, I understood why we can't save everyone.
So that's why now
I'm not selling it to you.
You were defeated in that moment, essentially. Oh,
reality hit. A life lesson from dogs. See, that's why dogs are, I guess, seen as, you know, such close companions to humans, because they can teach you life lessons like that.
Would you eat a dog, Mo?
No, I would not eat a dog. Not knowingly. I would not knowingly eat a dog. I'm going to say, you know, I've been places where I don't ask, I just eat. You know, ask questions afterwards, but I wouldn't knowingly eat a dog, no.
So you would eat a dog that? You didn't know?
No, I've never eaten a dog. No, I've never eaten, never tried, tasted.
That's what you're saying.
No, I'm not saying
and
I
then
would.
Then you ask about it after.
That's what you literally just said. If somebody fool you into eating dog.
He would eat the dog.
I will eat the dog, yeah.
Would you be pissed? Would you be annoyed?
Yeah, I'd be like, why didn't you tell me this was dog? I would at least like to have prepared myself.
After you've been like, I don't know what that was. That was the best.
Yeah, I'd still munch on it. You know, actually, speaking on that, I was watching a Vice documentary not too long ago, and it was talking about since the pandemic and everything that's happened, like the price for dogs have been going up and the demand for dogs as well. So people have actually been stealing. And I've seen this a lot around my area, just posters of dogs and cats that are missing. And it's an unusual amount. Like, you'll be walking down the street and maybe see about 10 different posters. Mm. And this, And, you know, over the course of time, it's not the same. Like, it's really not, it's not the same pets. And I was watching this documentary, and it was basically saying, and it was interviewing, it's a lucrative business now. Like, people are dog napping. So if you're in the park, they'll basically have, like, dog masters, I want to call them dog whisperers or dog trainers, that are part of this gang who will come and coerce the dog to come over. They'll snatch it and then they'll sell it for like 4 or 5 times the price.
Sell it to China.
Who knows?
But that's a very ridiculous deal, because pet dog costs so much, can make you so much more money. If you treat them nicely, treat them as a public companion, the price is like thousands of pounds. But food, how much would you like?
Yeah, not too much. Exactly, yeah. So I guess it makes more sense why they're doing it. One of the guys was like, yeah, you know, because I think they asked the question, like, how do you feel? Like, do you not feel bad about it? And he was like, I was in jail for doing whatever I did. I came out of jail. There was a pandemic. I just had to get on with the only way to make money. So
the only way to make money.
The way I see it is, it's all money to me. He doesn't see it as dogs, and I don't know, man. It's, I don't like dogs personally, but for me, I was just like, yeah, that's maybe just a bit too much.
Mo, you used to have a deep fear of dogs.
I used to hate.
Is dogs. That still there? Used to be terrified. Deep hatred. Still, like, he would see a dog and freak out.
Yeah, almost panic attack.
Yeah, like the more you see now, the strong, like, confident, melanin endowed individual, he would turn into a shadow of the person who he is now. Insane.
Yeah, I don't know whether it was just the area we grew up in and the fact that there was like just dogs that shouldn't be domestic dogs. You know, the ones that they stand on their, they stand on their 2 feet and it's like they're over the back garden fence and they're just. I think those experiences when I was very young was quite traumatizing.
When they're taller than you.
Way taller than them. And it's not like that they're aggressive, you know. And I do remember or recall one event in particular where I was cycling to school. And as I was cycling to school, I had got bit.
Oh, no.
I think, Odds, a similar thing happened to you, no? 100%. Yeah, I'm telling you, I don't know whether it was that cycle to... From Kingsthorpe
perhaps it was the same dog that did us both. East side Northampton. Maybe it was the same dog.
But I have been bitten, and for me that was just too far.
Oh my god! I've been bitten by dog twice. I have to take that. How to call that injection? You know that?
Oh, for rabies.
Literally, yes, I have to take rabies injection twice because I got bitten by dog twice. But I still play with them. And to be honest, I asked for it.
Yeah, most of you know.
I think one of them is my neighbor's cat, one of them is my uncle's cat. For both times, they were eating. They're eating a bone. And I just want to play with them. And I got annoyed they're not paying attention to me, so I started to taking the bone out of their mouth. And they warned me with multiple grunt, but I'm just not giving up. I'm just like, play with me, stop eating. And then they end up biting my hands instead of the bone.
You deserved it.
I did deserve it.
But something that was said that brings me to my final great experience of China. I was in a Tesco's first and foremost.
In China?
I was in a Tesco's. Oh. Yes.
Oh, okay.
A British shopping mall.
Is Tesco's British? Yeah.
Yes.
Nice. No, I'm sure it is.
And
every little help.
While I was shopping there, this old woman asked me to grab something from the top shelf, and I'm quite a short guy in England, so I was like, "This never happens back where I live." And I took it like a freaking champion, and I gave it to her like, "This is for you, woman." So that was an amazing experience.
Yeah, the average height. I was enjoying in buying kids' shoes and kids' clothing for the first few years when I was studying here. It's like everything is half price and it fits me perfectly. And still my classmates was like, oh, what is that sneaker? Is that limited edition? I've never seen it.
No,
it's
like
kids, kids version.
Nice.
I feel this height, this beauty standard of short, tall, it's also something so like have such a majority and minority. As a short person myself, I was reading a book called The Courage of the Disliked, where they talk about this inferior complexity. It says when the mainstream beauty are appreciated, those tall ones with long legs and European short, you just feel inferior. But there is advantage for everybody's shape. And which I found is true. Like as a short person, I've normally been seen quite harmless. And that's why, for example, I can be savage. Like when I'm in front of people, face to face with people, if I just show my savage side, people will find it funny, amusing. I can make people laugh, which I'm happy about. But if I'm a super tall, like a very muscular, like people, and I make the same joke, people probably will feel threatened, and then instead of feeling amused by it, but feel offended by it. So I appreciate of like being small to give me that advantage of like have a better chance to be interpreted as harmless. That's why most of my problems of the way I speak comes from just text when people cannot see me in person.
Mm-hmm. Well, you can't really translate emotion through text. I find it impossible. Like I'm terrible at texting anyway, but because it takes a lot to really convey what I'm trying to say. And I don't want a joke to be taken the wrong way or a normal sentence to be taken as I'm sad or over the top. Like,
yeah,
it's really difficult. Oh, well.
Yeah.
I guess the way I try to approach it is just use as many emojis as possible.
Yes.
I feel like the emoji library is so big and they continue to add stuff. So I'm like, there's a reason that, you know, whoever these developers or the engineers or whoever decided to add these new, I don't know, mage or broomstick emoji, there's a reason. And it's probably to help convey a message or something like that. Or use GIFs.
Yeah. And there is so much nuances in the smiley ones, the different smiley ones. There's just so much message you can communicate in the tiny one. Definitely, I'm a huge fan of overuse emojis because I like video chat. I feel when I can see people's face, I feel relaxed. The things that like gets me on my nerves the most is just plain phone calls. I think phone have a weird filter also on people's voice. It's just when I'm on the phone, I have least chance of understanding anybody trying to tell me anything. And then video call the best. And then the second choice to me is always text. And then, yeah, for safety reason, now I'm just adding completely overused emojis to just make sure people
understand.
Yeah.
I don't think that's because you're not originally from England. I think that's because it's just difficult to convey emotions. So it's something which everyone does. But that makes me wonder, what brought you to England? Why are you here? What are you doing here?
It's completely random. I was not supposed to be here. I basically applied a master degree after work for a year.
Why did you decide England?
It's just England, the school, CSM, the one I applied, is the first one I tried. Because they have an office in my city, so there's some face-to-face tutorials. Oh, nice. I thought, I just use this service to figure out my portfolio, and then I use that to apply a bunch, and then I want to go to California, so I try that later. And then I just use CSM as a test. I thought I'm not going to get it because it's a pretty good school, but then I just got it. And then I got it, I was like, I never thought about going to London. But it's a very fancy, very good school. Like, it's really hard to get in, and now I got in. Okay, I don't want to do the rest of the work anymore. I'm just going to London.
So it just kind of happened.
It happened, and I went to London, and I met my husband. And we both thought, before we kind of decide to settle here, we both thought, we're just here to get a degree and go back to our life. But then it's not fair for me to go to a German-speaking country or him to go to a Chinese-speaking country to work as a graphic designer. Back then we were graphic designers. It's too hard. So we said, let's just stay in London for now. But now it's, the now has become very, very long time. And I
was going to say, how long ago was that?
that was like 6 years ago.
Mm.
And we set ourselves a time frame 5 years. From the beginning, so for 5 years, for sure, we're going to go back to one of our hometown because we're both very family-oriented person. But now, it still didn't happen. And last time when we have the chance, our company will have an Amsterdam club, which is go back to, like, one step closer to EU. I was an enthusiastic one. Like, let's go. Finally, we can have our grand plan of moving back to EU. They were like, no, I like it here. I like London. Like, I don't want to go back. I think we can stay for a bit longer. So, yeah, I don't know. Maybe
What would be your first choice? Where to live?
Oh.
And why?
Back then was California.
Oh, still.
I just love summer. I love sun. And when I was in high school, I spent the summer in California. I just really like the weather. I just like the weather. And every time when it rains and when it's super windy here in London, I just get very, very sad. But I do love the cultural part of London, all these exhibitions and shows. And sometimes you just get to know very talented artists just around you. You get to jam with them. I love this part. But whenever the wind starts, all of that love just been blown away. I'm just like, oh.
Hey, Okello here. This section is a space where we'll be sharing short stories, creative experiences, and art.
Chosina Muthemba Makel, 1945 to 1971. Muthemba was a key figure in the Mozambique struggle for independence. Born in a well-known nationalist family, she joined the struggle young, at first becoming active in clandestine student groups before joining the Mozambique Liberation Front, Free Limo, in 1960. She was the driving force behind the Women's Detachment, a group of women that picked up arms to fight for their country's liberation. In 1969, at the age of 24, she married Samora Machel, the man who would become the first president of Mozambique.
With calmness and stillness, it comes to an end. We hope you found some gems and go away richer in soul and spirit. We're showing you the three paths of the sage. Your path is your own. Which path do you follow? Until next time.